Good morning. Today we are continuing on in a sermon series, Unanswered Questions. Just in case you weren't here last week, you may go, well, what unanswered questions? There is a guy, Dr. Jeremiah Johnson, and he is a biblical scholar, but he's also a radio talk show host. And he said he encouraged people to, by the way, they're going to Kids Blast right now. It's disconcerting for a pastor when people run out of the sanctuary and you're preaching, but it's okay. They're going to have a great time out there, and that's good. That's a good thing. Yeah, they are excited. What were we talking about? Okay, so this sermon series, Unanswered Questions, Jeremiah Johnson, he's a New Testament scholar, but he also has a call-in talk show host, and he noticed the things that people were calling in and asking questions about were not typically what he heard preachers talking about. And so he started thinking, that's a little bit disjointed if we're presenting the gospel, and that's good. But if we are going to love the Lord our God with all of our heart, soul, mind, and strength, then we need to be thinking people. We need to be people who are studying the scripture and looking for the answers to the questions that we have. And so he put together this book trying to answer questions that he feels are generally going unanswered. But it made me think, what I'd like to do is I'd like for us in here to address some of those issues that maybe are unanswered for you, but then I'd like for you to help. If you have questions, if things have occurred to you scripturally, like why does that work, or how does this, or what is God doing, you can text it to me in the bulletin. There is on the back, top right, my phone number is listed there, and so you can text me questions if you want to. Or we've gone around and we've put 3x5 cards in the little pew racks there in front of you. And as a question comes, you're welcome to jot that question down. And you can just fold that in half and leave it in the seat there next to you. And we'll come by after the service and gather them. Now, I'm warning you, you got to leave it on the blue part of the pew, because we have trouble finding them sometimes. You know, like, well, I left it in the hymnal on page 414. You know, like, well, we didn't find it. So if you could leave it out there, then we'll come by and gather those and try to answer those questions for you as we go. Today, I want to attempt to address another unanswered question, and that is, why can I trust in a bodily resurrection? And in all fairness, and really the interest of time, 3 weeks ago was Easter, and I preached on that, a bodily resurrection. And so today I want to cover some different material, but quickly I want to put that outline up there from the other day and just run through this really quick. We actually have lots of reasons that we can trust in a bodily resurrection. Questions that we asked at Easter time: how do we know the Bible wasn't just made up? Well, archaeology and history supports this. Both Jesus' followers and his critics both wrote about him and about events that went on. How do we know that the resurrection was real? Medical evidence demonstrates that Jesus couldn't have survived the crucifixion. A Roman guard was dispatched to guard his tomb. So what I'm telling you is we know that he died. We know he lived. We know he died. Historians say Jesus' life is, it's easier to prove that Jesus lived than it is to prove that George Washington lived. Y'all following me? Okay, so we know that Jesus Christ was a real person, that he had followers, that he lived in Galilee. Everything supports that. How about the resurrection? Jesus' followers, his disciples, were transformed from doubters who were afraid to identify with Jesus into these bold proclaimers of the resurrection. The resurrection was central to Christian teaching from the very beginning. It wasn't like eventually it morphed into some story about resurrection. It was right from the beginning this was taught by the believers. The number of Jesus' followers has increased since the very beginning. Paul, who was a chief persecutor of Christianity, said, I had this encounter with Jesus and it made me the chief opponent, or proponent, I should say, of Christianity. He turned around completely. And then there is the fact that I and many of you and Christians throughout centuries have said, Jesus Christ is real. He is alive and he's made a difference in my life. So these are just a few reasons we can count that these things are real and true and good. So this morning I want to shift gears just a little bit and talk about the bodily resurrection. In our society, in our culture, we love the idea that somebody might come back from the dead. I mean, it's everywhere. Anybody in here ever heard of Dracula before, right? Bram Stoker's or otherwise. There are tons of those ideas out there. If you start looking at things like in terms of books and all that, even in pop culture, we see things, you know, like anybody in here read maybe or seen Interview with a Vampire or Vampire Diaries or any of those kind of things that have to do with vampires? Okay, one hand. The rest of y'all, shame on you. Two, okay. All right, we're making progress. How about Frankenstein, right? Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, or there have been lots of remakes. There were two recent remakes of the Frankenstein movies. I asked in the early service, who in here has seen that? And it was like crickets chirping. So apparently they didn't do too well in the box office. We got that. How about zombies? Right now, the American, what is it, AMC, right, movie channel, has got a series called The Walking Dead. And it is extremely popular. They say this year more people will watch The Walking Dead than will watch the World Series or the NBA Championships. Like, it is extremely popular right now. And this, what you see up here on the screen, there is this thing now called Twisted Classics, where they take classic books like Pride and Prejudice and they add stuff, zombies, right? Pride and Prejudice and zombies, or vampires, or whatever, you know. So there are all kinds, we are interested, we like it. The idea that, man, somebody could be dead and they could come back. So anyway, where am I going with all this? Listen to this. This is what Johnson says about it. To the modern mind, the dead rising is intriguing, even entertaining. However, in the New Testament world, the idea of a bodily resurrection was unheard of in Roman circles. With the exception of Judaism and Christianity, no Roman believed in resurrection. In fact, the Romans viewed resurrection as gross and disgusting as a concept. So here's why this is significant. Well, I'll tell you what, before I get to that, like, you got this gross and disgusting concept to people, but did you know that back in that day, everybody believed in ghosts? Everybody. So I want to give you a couple of biblical examples, or at least one biblical example. In Matthew chapter 14, there is this story that probably we're all familiar with, right? It's the story of Peter walking on the water. Jesus has just performed this miracle. He provided food. He took 5 loaves and 2 fish, and he used that to break it, and it multiplied so that he was able to feed a crowd of 5,000 people with it. It was miraculous. Then he gets his followers. He says, y'all go on over to the other side. He puts them in a boat, and they sail off across this lake. He dismisses the crowd. He goes up for a time of prayer, and then he decides, I'm going to go join the rest of my followers, right? And these guys, the followers, many of whom are professional fishermen, they spend their life on the water. There is this storm that is raging, right? The wind is blowing, the ship is being beaten about so that they are not able to make it to the other side. And it's about 3 a.m. And Jesus says, I think I'm going to go out there and join them. So how does he get out there? He walks on the water, right? And what are the disciples, what's their response to that? I want to read it to you. Here it is. This is Matthew chapter 14, verses 26 and 27. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. It's a ghost, they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid. I mean, don't they know that he does the supernatural? He just fed 5,000 people with nothing. Don't they think Jesus is going to come to us? Why do they think it's a ghost? Because in their culture, they believe in ghosts, right? Like a spirit is going to come to us walking across the water. So there just is that assumption. This is what Jesus is doing. So here's why I'm telling you this. Let's pretend for just a minute that you were making all this stuff up. Why on earth would you take a concept that would be abhorrent to the Romans? I mean, they are the global governmental superpower of the day. If you want something to spread and you could get it into the hands of the Romans, they got roads, they got guards, there's protection. You could easily spread this throughout the Roman Empire. Why would you pick a doctrine that is going to be abhorrent to them? What you could do is just say, well, Jesus died on a cross and he came back as a spirit, right? And he gives us power and all that, and that would be much more acceptable to them. I'll tell you why. Here's why. This is Johnson's words. A key point to consider is that the early church could not have selected a more difficult talking point to launch their new movement than by proclaiming to the Mediterranean world that their Savior, a convicted, executed criminal of Rome, had in fact risen from the dead. The only reason the early Christian movement taught and eventually died proclaiming a bodily resurrection was because it actually happened. Let's talk about what they did believe. Luke chapter 24, verse 34 tells us. Let me turn to that real quick. Luke 24, 34. This is a resurrection appearance, okay? Jesus, he's died on a cross. The Romans put him to death, right? He's risen from the dead. He's appeared to a few people. His disciples are basically afraid of the government. If they came and they got him, what are they going to do to us? So they're huddled together. They're hiding in the upper room, right? And it says that Jesus suddenly appeared among them. And he says, "Peace be with you." And, like, I love that picture, right? You know, like, they're huddled in a room, the doors are locked, they're hiding from the government, and Jesus goes, "Peace be with you!" You know, like, ha! You gotta know he's got a sense of humor. Anyway, so they're terrified, and listen to this. This is verse 37. They were startled and frightened, thinking they saw a ghost. Why? Because Jesus was dead. Verse 38, he said to them, "Why are you troubled? Why do doubts rise in your minds? Look at my hands and my feet. It is I myself. Touch me and see. A ghost does not have flesh and bones as you see I have." And he asks them for something to eat and eats with them there. Why? Why is he doing this? Because the bodily resurrection means something. He wants to prove to them, he wants them to understand he physically came back to life. It's important that they put their hands in the holes, right? That they see his side, that he eats food with them, and they see this is, he's flesh and blood again. Okay, so why? Maybe you're asking yourself, if God can do anything, why is this bodily resurrection even necessary, right? Like, clearly they believe in ghosts. Why not just do it that way? Well, I think there's a couple of really important reasons. The first one is a bodily resurrection is what the Jews, the Israelites, the common people needed in their day. God doesn't ask us to trust in him blindly. He gives us reason. He proves to us that he is trustworthy and then asks us to put our trust in him. So, I think this is what the people needed. And let's take as a, for instance, life expectancy. Did you know that here in the United States right now, the life expectancy is older than it has ever been in recorded history, according to the Center for Disease Control? Now, you know, women, they live forever, and men, not so much. But if you average them out together, then the average life expectancy is 79 years old. Okay, pretty good. 1970, it was 8 years younger. You follow me? Like, medical advancement has really helped, and we are living longer and longer lives. Anybody want to take a guess as to what the average life expectancy was in biblical times, in Jesus' day specifically? 110. 50, 30, 47. I like that it's specific. The average life expectancy was 20 years old. Now, you go, how do you know that? You know, was there a survey of how old everybody was that the Roman government did? Well, no, it's based on archaeology. They've gone back and they look at graveyards. And what do the bodies look like in the graveyards? Typically, the bodies are mostly children, right? That about two-thirds of the people were children when they died. So if you made it to adulthood, you're really doing something. Now, there was a graveyard in particular that Johnson cites in his book where there were 111 graves there, and I think 83 of them were children. That tells you something, right? Like if you live to be 50, you got all these children that are offsetting the age there. As a matter of fact, Romans, they didn't even name their children until they were over a week old because they figured there's probably no need. That's kind of a sad commentary, isn't it? But think for just a minute about your own life, right? We have insurance, we have health care, such as it is. We have, you know, booster shots and prenatal care and postnatal care. And anybody in here ever had an infection? Anybody in here ever had like something that could have been life-threatening? That needed a surgery maybe along the way? Well, if you don't have any of that, then what happens? You die. Not a lot of choices. So here comes Jesus, right? And what are the things that surround his coming? John the Baptist prepared the way for Jesus, right? He did this baptism where he told everybody, you need to turn your hearts back to God, you need to follow after him, because here's the man. This is the Messiah. Jesus is the promised one. I'm not even fit to bow down and tie his sandal, right? So then later on, John the Baptist ends up in jail. And he has kind of this moment of doubt, you know, like, is Jesus really the guy? I want to check. And so he sends word to Jesus and asks, are you the Messiah? Are you the one that we could expect? And how does Jesus respond? Do you know? Listen to this. I'm going to read it to you. This is in Luke chapter 7. Jesus says, the blind receive their sight, the lame walk, lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised up, and the poor have the good news preached to him. How about this? Jesus goes into the home of this guy named Jairus. Jairus' daughter is sick, and he goes and gets Jesus, and he says, come and help my daughter. And so Jesus goes with him, and they enter into the house. And when they get there, there are these people, and they're wailing and mourning and all this kind of thing. And they tell Jairus, you may as well let Jesus go on back because your daughter is dead. And Jesus, without looking at the daughter, as far as we can tell, says, she's not dead, she's only sleeping. And they mock him. They're like, she is definitely dead. You're totally wrong on that one. And laugh. And he goes in and he says to her, listen to this. It's in Aramaic, so let me read it to you. In Aramaic, instead of in Greek, he says, Talitha kumi, which means little girl, I say to you, arise. And she comes back to life. Or how about this? On another occasion, he's going with some of his followers into this little village. It's called Nain, N-A-I-N. And in this little village, there is a funeral procession that is going on. This woman, she's a widow. Her husband has died, and this is her only son has just died. Now, that means she's going to be poor. She's going to be destitute. She has no way of making a living for herself in that society. And Jesus' heart goes out to her. And so he goes to, I don't know how your Bible says it exactly, he goes to the coffin, he goes to the pyre probably that they're carrying him on and touches it, and he commands the young man to arise, and he sits up, and Jesus carries him back to his mother alive again. And last week, Dr. Dennis Swanberg, out at the LOL event, he talked about Lazarus, Jesus bringing Lazarus back. When Jesus sends his disciples out, he gives them authority to forgive sin, he gives them authority to heal people, and he gives them authority to, how'd you guess? Raise the dead. Now, that sounds kind of crazy to us, right? But I think it tells two things. One, to a crowd that is literally dying, it says to them, here is a God who has power over everything. life and death, physical health. It has been estimated that in the Roman Empire, on any given day, 25% of the people were sick, dying, or in need of what we would call immediate medical attention. That's one out of every four. And here comes Jesus with the ability to heal and to help and even to raise the dead. What does that say? It says you're not facing anything that he can't handle. He's got power over it all. The second thing that I think this really says to us is the details in these stories are so clear. Why? Why do we need all of this detail put in here? Because these things are grounded in history, right? Luke, he writes two books, the book of Luke and then also the book of Acts. And in the book of Acts, he says to the guy he's writing it to, a guy named Theophilus, I'm writing these things so you'll have many convincing proofs. I want you to understand, right? This is Luke chapter 1. He's telling Theophilus why he's writing. Many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us, just as they were handed down to us by those who from the first were eyewitnesses and servants of the word. Therefore, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, it seemed good also to me to write an orderly account for you, most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things you have been taught. Luke is writing at a time when he can say, look, you don't have to believe me. I'm just recording these things that I've researched. You want to know for sure whether all of this Jesus stuff is true? There's a little village, and it's called Nain. And in it, there's this woman, and she was a widow, and her son died, and Jesus brought him back from the dead. If you don't believe it, go to Nain and ask around. If you were in Nain, would you remember this? I know I would. He's given them proof. He's given them evidence. He's showing them, you want to understand this stuff? Go talk to the people who really saw it. I'm just collecting all the information for you. God is proving himself trustworthy to people so that they will be able to put their trust in him. A second reason that I think the bodily resurrection is important is not just they didn't just need what the bodily resurrection presented, but we need what a bodily resurrection presents. There was a guy, and his name is Dr. William Sangster, and he was a pastor in London, England. And on his first day in the pulpit, he was given the task of standing up in front of his congregation and telling them that Germany had declared war. It was the beginning of World War II. And do y'all remember from history the Blitzkrieg? You know, what that was is they basically said, we're going to blitz the city and we're going to kill all the civilians we can possibly kill. And it'll take the wind out of their sails and they'll be ready to give up, right, to surrender to us. And so they started dropping bombs on London. What does that do to your worship experience, right? That would really change what we're doing here this morning. As a matter of fact, Sangster, he had a pulpit and he had a red light installed on his pulpit so that they could see when the bombs were starting, right? The red light would come on and people would know to take cover. Bombs are going to fall. And while that was going on, the church grew from 300 to 3,000. Why? Because when faced with that, you need to know Jesus can handle this. That life and death is not the end. That he brings hope to us in our lives. That there isn't anything you're going to face that he can't handle. And it becomes very real to you in a situation like that. You ever heard there's no such thing as an atheist in a foxhole? People need the hope that Jesus brings to their lives. Listen to this. Sangster survived the Blitzkrieg, but he got this debilitating disease. It took away his ability to walk. It eventually took away his ability to talk. On the last Easter morning of his life, he wrote a letter to his daughter, and it says, "It is terrible to wake up on Easter morning and have no voice to shout, 'He is risen!' But it would be still more terrible to have a voice and not want to shout, 'He's risen.'" Like Sangster lived a life that was resurrection focused. Not just believing there's pie in the sky and the sweet by and by, but believing God makes a difference right here and right now. He brings hope in a desperate time. What do you believe? See, I believe there is an almighty God, and he has the power to speak and make changes in this physical world. And that kind of God brings hope. He makes a difference. He says he wants to be involved in our lives because he loves us so much. Have you ever met this God? I'd like to introduce him to you. We're going to sing a song together in here, and I just want to invite you. If you don't know Christ, would you come and just talk to us? Let us at least say, here's how you can start a relationship with the Lord. Maybe this morning you know Christ, you know you're a follower. Maybe there's something that needs to change in your life. Maybe you just needed to hear, whatever your situation is, there's hope. There is nothing that is too big or too hard or too bad for God. He can handle it. He can change it. He can forgive it. He can bless you. While we sing, would you just pray? Ask God, come into your life. Ask him to take whatever situation you're facing. I'm going to stand down front, and I'm going to invite Tony to come stand down front. And if you want somebody to pray with, if there's something we can do to help you in your own walk with Christ, then we want to do it. And so we're offering that as an invitation this morning. You respond to God, and then if you'd like, we're here for you.